As we saw last time, when Hadrian took over for Trajan, it was a little awkward. Trajan went to his deathbed without naming a successor, and then over the course of several secretive days, Trajan died, and Hadrian emerged as the next emperor. Only Trajan's wife and Praetorian prefect seemed to know what happened. But it's not that other people weren't around, they were. But they were murdered under mysterious circumstances. And then four leading senators were also executed without a trial. Whispers of a plot swirled, but to this day we still don't know what happened. Hadrian would forever be treated with suspicion by the Roman Senate, but not by the population. They could not get enough of him. Why was Hadrian such a beloved emperor, and what was his new vision for the Roman Empire? Find out on this episode of the Pax Romana podcast. Episode 37, Hadrian's Roman Commonwealth. As we talked about last time, the strange and secret circumstances of Hadrian's accession, along with the execution of four senators, would forever mar the new emperor Hadrian's relationship with the Senate. And so Hadrian relied heavily on personal advisors and friends over the traditional senatorial body, and he weakened the Italian nobility's hold on the Senate by appointing new senators from the provinces rather than from Italy. Hadrian himself, by the way, like Trajan, was himself born in the provinces. But Hadrian would show proper respect for the rulers that preceded him. This was a crucial mark of modesty for Roman emperors, as we've seen on this podcast. So Trajan had secured a major victory against Parthia, despite the sweeping rebellion at the end of his reign that undid most of those efforts. But still, a victory was a victory, and the Roman Senate offered Hadrian the right to stand in Trajan's place for the triumphal parade in Rome. But Hadrian chose deference to Trajan's memory, and he requested that the Senate instead commission an effigy of Trajan to ride in the triumphator's four-horse chariot. And we actually have images of the effigy that still survive. It was essentially a life-size body double of Trajan, with a bit of a large head, wearing the crown of the victor. And this effigy was, as the story says, paraded through the streets of Rome in honor of the recently deceased Emperor Trajan and his victories over Parthia. Trajan was also granted godhood. The Senate decreed that the man they called the best and greatest emperor deserved a place among the Pantheon. Trajan's ashes found their rest in the base of his newly built column. Perhaps to win popularity, Hadrian followed his piety to Trajan with a massive debt cancellation program. It was the most generous and far-reaching in Roman history. Now, Romans could owe taxes to a lot of different people, multiple treasuries, one for the Senate, one for the emperor, for example. And not surprising, for many Romans, the bills had become impossible to pay. And so, in a sweeping, generous decree, Hadrian abolished all back taxes from the past 15 years. The total amount came to around 900 million sesterces. So, just to drive the point home, Hadrian's guards are shown in numerous coins and inscriptions, tossing bundles and books and ledgers, all of records of debt, into a giant bonfire in the Roman Forum. There's a monument to the ceremony, and the inscription is still around to be read. It declares Hadrian to be, quote, the first and only one of all the emperors to cancel 900,100,000 sesterces owed to the fiscus, that's the treasury, and by this liberality to render not only the citizens now living, but also their descendants free from worry. And you can find the reference for that inscription in the show notes. Hadrian followed this massive public gift with cash handouts to both soldiers as well as hundreds of thousands of Roman citizens. It almost seemed like Hadrian had an inexhaustible flow of wealth. He certainly spent lavishly on public buildings as well, constructing the largest temple that would ever be built in Rome. Hadrian, like many emperors before him, appropriated some of the grounds of Nero's Golden Palace. We talked about that monument on episode 19. Well, the temple that Hadrian built was dedicated both to the goddess Venus, she's the goddess of beauty and the mythical ancestor of the people of Rome, but also the goddess Roma. Sounds like Rome. Well, that's because Roma is the patron goddess of the city of Rome. The temple was large, it was opulent, and supposedly Hadrian had a bit of a hand in the design. One day he was showing it to the architect behind all of Trajan's monumental buildings. This is the guy that designed, for example, Trajan's bridge across the Danube. He designed Trajan's Forum. He designed the temple to Trajan in Trajan's Forum. So one of the most famous and well-known architects living at the time. Well, he was pretty honest with Hadrian during that walkthrough, and he said, hey, your statues are a little bit too large. If they were to stand up, they might hit their head on the ceiling of the temple. Hadrian was not amused by this comment, totally unimpressed, and he just decided to have this celebrity architect banished from the city of Rome and then subsequently executed him. Now, unfortunately for us, very little of the Temple of Venus and Roma survives, but another of the architectural wonders completed under Hadrian does, and that's the Great Domed Pantheon, the temple to all the gods. That building survived the ravages of antiquity by being converted to a church, probably in the 7th century AD. Now, if you go visit the Pantheon, you'll notice, of course, the lavish marble floors. When you're outside, you'll see the imposing portico and its well-preserved inscription. But go inside and look up and see the reinforced concrete dome, the largest of its kind ever built, that dominates the interior. There is a single round opening at the very, very top called the oculus, the eye, and it lets light beam right into the central floor. It is absolutely stunning. Now, Hadrian gets the credit for this building, but he, in fact, just restored an earlier temple that was built under Augustus. And here is another place where we see Hadrian's deference to past leaders, because his name is actually not on the Pantheon, despite the fact that he is largely responsible for funding its reconstruction. Instead, Hadrian had the original inscription from the age of Augustus restored to its place of prominence, where it still stands to this day atop the portico. But there are some ways in which Hadrian broke pretty hard against the past. Some of these were just symbolic. So Augustus, for example, and many subsequent emperors were buried in Augustus's mausoleum. This is located on the Field of Mars, just outside of the sacred boundary of the city. Well, Hadrian decided to erect his own mausoleum, the first emperor to do so in over 100 years. And as with the mausoleum of Augustus, future emperors would claim burial spots in Hadrian's mausoleum. I say burial spots, many of them were cremated. Either way, Hadrian's mausoleum survives in much better condition than Augustus's. It was modified quite a bit through the ages, but you can still see it in Rome. It won't be called the Mausoleum of Hadrian, however. You will know it as Castel Sant'Angelo, the castle that appears just near the Vatican. Another way in which Hadrian's reign seems to take the empire into new directions is with his personal obsession with Greek culture and his apparent desire to Hellenize the Roman Empire. Greek philosophy, Greek culture, and Greek literature flourished in Hadrian's empire. In some ways, of course, Greek literature had been flourishing for several centuries, but Hadrian made a personal push towards Grecophilia in the Roman Empire. And I mean that in multiple ways. So, small ways, for example, Hadrian was the first emperor to don the Greek philosopher's beard in his imperial image. But more controversial is Hadrian's open and even celebrated interest in Greek pederasty, that is, romantic relationships between the emperor and adolescent boys. And while touring Bithynia, this is a province in Asia Minor, Hadrian would groom a 12-year-old boy named Antinous, writing him poetry, taking him on hunting trips, and Hadrian's other travels. And Hadrian did spend a lot of time outside of Rome touring the empire. He established a villa not very far outside of Rome. It's called Tivoli. You can still see it to this day. But most of the time, he was traveling throughout the provinces, visiting almost every single Roman province during his reign. Now, the trips were not purely for pleasure. Hadrian would inspect military fortifications and make sure that the borders of the empire were well defended by competent men. We actually have surviving a report card, you might call it, that Hadrian gave to soldiers in Numidia after he inspected their camp and their battle readiness. Let me just read a little bit of what the emperor said, because the soldiers were so proud they had it inscribed in stone. Hadrian said this, quote, "You did everything in orderly fashion. You filled the field with maneuvers. Your javelin hurling was not without grace, although you used javelins which are short and stiff. Several of you hurled your lances equally well, and your mounting was smart just now and lively yesterday. If there was anything lacking, I should notice it. If there were anything conspicuously bad, I should point it out, but you pleased me uniformly throughout the whole exercise. Your prefect evidently looks after you carefully. I bestow upon you a largesse." And the inscription goes on from there. Now, by largesse, Hadrian means he gave them a cash bonus. And I have to say, this sounds quite a bit like feedback a college student might receive on a paper, although they probably aren't going to get a cash bonus. Hadrian clearly took a detailed interest. That's what this source shows us about how his empire worked. He seemed to see the Roman Empire not as a collection of conquered societies or provinces, but as an emergent commonwealth. Hadrian envisioned a unified empire with one emperor and one people. And in order to secure this commonwealth, Hadrian abandoned the foreign conquests that many of his predecessors had used to establish their legitimacy and win wealth for the empire. So Trajan's Parthian conquests, for example, were largely returned by Hadrian to Parthia as part of a treaty to secure Rome's eastern border and establish favorable trade relations. Border fortifications under Hadrian became a priority. The most famous example of these is still around. It's Hadrian's Wall in Britain. 73 miles of stone wall. Took about 6 years to complete, with forts every 5 miles and gates for controlled movement and for trade and for taxes. And so in the end, Hadrian's reign ended up being a period of relative peace and prosperity in the Roman Empire. He focused mostly on internal reforms and public works, and he sought to create a unified Roman identity. However, near the end of his life, tragedy struck both Hadrian and parts of the Roman Empire. First, in AD 130, Hadrian took a cruise down the Nile with his lover Antinous, who was now about 18 years old. Now, rumors abound about exactly what happened on that trip, but we know at least one fact. Antinous died, apparently drowned in the murky waters of the Nile. Ancient sources speculate pretty wildly. Was it just an accident? Or was Antinous murdered? Or perhaps, did he even sacrifice himself as an offering to the gods to ensure the prosperity of his emperor. But whatever the cause of death, Hadrian's response was overwhelming. The emperor founded a new city at a site pretty close to where Antoninus died, named the city Antonopolis after the teenager. Antoninus was then given godhood. He was the only person outside the imperial family to attain such an honor. And then a flood of statuary just deluged the empire at this point. And still to this day, statues of Antoninus outnumber those of just about every other Roman, including almost every single Roman emperor. Now, the death of Antoninus was a great personal blow to Hadrian, but things were about to get worse. Hadrian may have wanted a unified commonwealth, but there were plenty of groups in the Roman Empire uninterested in participating in such a project. And as under Nero and Trajan, hard-line Jews in Judea eagerly awaited opportunities to rebel and assert their independence. And as we'll see next time, in AD 132, Hadrian gave them the excuse they needed. He proposed a new city on the ruins of Jerusalem, and even worse, a temple to Jupiter on the site of the ancient Jewish temple. And the revolt that followed would upend Roman rule in Judea, but as ever, an inevitable Roman response would follow. Only this one would permanently alter the Holy Land and essentially end Jewish dominance of Judea for nearly 2,000 years.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exocor. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.